Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 420. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun episode for you this week. Let me introduce our guest. Drew Droege is an actor, a writer, a producer, a podcaster, and just one of the most entertaining gents you will find out there. His online videos as Chloe are viral sensations and have been featured in Entertainment Weekly, The Advocate, Huffington Post, Time Out New York, and Marc Jacobs' 2016 spring campaign. I just love that that's on the list. He can be seen on Paramount Network's TV reboot of Heathers, which I am so excited about, in early 2018. He's also been on Cocktails and Classics, Transparent, Big Mouth, Life in Pieces, Nobodies, Bob's Burgers, and Drunk History. On the stage, he has starred in the Ovation-recommended Die, Mommy, Die at Celebration Theater in L.A., as well as Julie Brown's The Homecoming Queens, Got a Musical, The Golden Girls, and the musical parodies of Troop Beverly Hills and The Devil Wears Prada. He's an OutFest Award winner. He's been featured in the Out 100. He's got his own podcast that we'll talk about. This year, he won an Indie Series Award as Best Guest Actor for #adulting. And on November 12th, previews will begin of Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, a hilarious solo play written by Drew, starring Drew. It's going to have an 8-week limited engagement at the Soho Playhouse. We'll talk about that too. But first, Drew, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thanks, Ken. Thank you so much. Congrats on 420 episodes. That's amazing.
It's something. Just keep going, Drew. We just keep going. We have so much ground to cover, my friend. Are you ready?
I was listening to you go over my bio, and I was just, you know, it's that, it's, thank you for all that stuff.
Do you have an awareness that you don't have to thank me, that you, Drew, actually did those things?
It just feels crazy. You know, it never feels like enough, Ken. You never feel it. You're always like, oh, gotta go, gotta keep moving. But, you know, I'll explore that in therapy.
It's... Well, that brings the question. I wasn't even going to go there right away, but are you one of those people who's constantly working for the next project, or are you good at being present and saying, hey, look at the cool stuff I've done?
Well, I try to get better at being present and being that way. I love being busy, and I feel like I actually do better work the busier I am, because I don't make anything too precious or waste too much time worrying about, you know, how something's going to go or how something went, because I have to move on to the next thing. I definitely don't feel like I have to, I can't slow down. I've gotten better at just sort of like taking a day where I do nothing, or, you know, and because that's really important to do, to let other stuff come in, or just go to a movie, or, you know, unplug your phone and all of that stuff. So, and then there are people that are 10 million times busier than I am. And I also think about that as well. And like, if they can get to a day, then, you know, so can the rest of us.
We can do it. Right. Can we do a little bird's eye view? Is there a narrative thread that connects what Drew Droege is trying to put out there to the world? What would you say that you're putting out there?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure. But I will say, I mean, I've been out in LA for a long time, and I've had to sort of pave my own way, like carve out a path, because, and I think everyone does it in a certain way, and it it has its challenges, and, you know, for different people in different ways. But when I learned how to write, and I learned that I had to write in order to, you know, make my dreams come true, it was actually very empowering to know that I had a little bit of control over what I was doing. And, you know, it's always nice when the phone rings and a job offer comes through, but it comes from putting it out there and just like pounding the pavement and trying a bunch of stuff. I mean, like, you know, what I learned in doing improv and sketch comedy is you put up a lot of stuff and very few things work, you know, and when things do work, you just follow those green lights and say, all right, this is something that, you know, hits. And so I'm going to do this as long as I can. And, you know, until the next thing comes along. So yeah, there's no real major connective plan. I mean, I've always wanted to play big, gay, messy characters. And I don't see that much of it still, like, in film and TV. So I'm definitely writing those kind of parts for myself because I think that's really necessary. And I'm interested in those people. And I think that, you know, we love our straight, messy people. And we love, you know, following them around. I'm like, let's have some gay messes. You know, we need our gay heroes, too. And, of course, we need our champions. And we need the ones that we look up to. But, you know, I like playing a little bit more damaged and, you know, oh my God, did he really just say that? And what's wrong with him? And is she going to be okay? That's way more what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah. We've heard from so many of your colleagues, you know, over the past 10 years of doing this show, just hearing about that. Apparently there's this concept out there called rejection that people have to be comfortable with in order to keep yourself going there in LA. Is that something that you perhaps have encountered?
Oh. Absolutely. What if I was like, no, I'm not familiar with, what is it, rejection? No, I don't know. I don't know that word. Oh my God, yes. I mean, everything that I have done that has gone well eventually, like, was immediately shot down by somebody.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, and, you know, the thing is, like, what I try to tell people, I'm like, nobody knows. Nobody knows the right answer. Nobody knows what's going to work. No, I mean, and so people will love to tell you because of other things that have worked before, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, you just kind of have to, I mean, thank God for the internet, because if I didn't have that, I don't know what I would be doing, because you're able to just shoot something on your phone and put it up. And then you find that there is an audience for, you know, what you're doing. And the bad stuff just kind of goes away. The stuff that sucks. I mean, nobody shares, you know, a video that's like mediocre to bad, you know, no, people just ignore it, but they don't, you know,
right.
So I always encourage people, like, put things out there, even if they're bad, it's not your job to judge whether they're good or bad. Like, the good stuff will rise. People will respond to that. And then you just, you know, keep making stuff.
Yeah. You got to keep going. You mentioned improv. You're an alum of the Groundlings and Upright Citizen Brigade. Well, what did that bring into your life in terms of approaching this work?
Well, that was always something that, like, really scared me before I started taking classes. And I found that I was able to, I had a voice that I could put in to my work. And it actually helped me create my own characters and sort of look at the point of view of, you know, these people I was creating and playing versus just standing and saying lines, you know, as an actor, it's like, you know, you don't realize how much. And then it helped me realize that it, you know, as an actor, you actually have a big, you know, say in, you know, how something is played, and you have a point of view and you have all that. But I learned that from improvising. That makes any sense.
Oh my gosh, amazing stuff. You have worked with some of my favorite people on this planet. I got to get your take on working with a couple of them. I just grew up obsessed with Julie Brown. I love her so much.
Oh my God. I know, me too. Me too. I pinch myself every day that I get to, like, work with her and be on stage with her. And I mean, we're doing the show right now in LA, and we're just doing 4 nights in LA in October. So if you're in LA, check out The Homecoming Queen's got a musical. I get to be the homecoming queen, and I watched that. I mean, that video over and over, and it's crazy that I get to play Debbie next to Julie, you know, and she is just a force of joy and brilliance and energy and so collaborative and just wants to hear our thoughts. And it's also great to work with somebody that is doing comedy for the sake of doing comedy. Like,
right.
She's had this huge career that everyone knows who she is. She's proved that she's a force of nature. And now she's like, let's make really fun stuff that is going to, you know, make people happy. And it's not about what's the next level and where's this going? And there's nothing cynical about it. It's just like, we're making something because we really enjoy putting on wigs and being stupid together.
Yeah. I can tell you where in my folks' house I was sitting when the Julie Brown show came on and she was parodying a video of Wilson Phillips, and it was the greatest thing that had ever happened to me.
Oh my God. No, I remember. I remember. I mean, The Edge and, you know, just say Julie and all this, you know, I know, Medusa and all of that. She's really
amazing stuff. Now, another person that not enough people know about, but just such a great friend of mine, and I would have her baby if that was genetically possible. How much do we love that Kate Pizzakis?
Oh my God, wonderful. She's so great. She's provided such a home for so many people to just get up and be stupid, you know. She's great. I mean, she's always doing something. You know, I got to do two of my favorite shows in LA at Rockwell, where they have incredible Broadway caliber talent. And then there's me next to them that's just screeching and squawking along. So they wrote really lovely roles for me where I didn't have to sing because I'm not a singer. And I'm on stage with people who are just like blow the roof off. And so it was always a treat to get to do True Beverly Hills and Devil Wears Prada.
I got to get out there and see those. Kate Pizakis and I singing Waiters together in New York City. Suddenly, Seymour 5 nights a week. It was good stuff. Love her. Love her. Now, we'll talk about Minor Revelations in a second, but Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations, not Drew's first podcast. We started out with Glitter in the Garbage.
Yes.
You have quite the podcasting history.
My podcastery goes back to, 2011 or something far-reaching. Glitter in the Garbage was a show I did for a year on Earwolf, and it was heavily improvised. I had people come on and do characters. I brought on a lot of people who knew each other. All my guests always were friends or friendly on some level or had worked together. And so we went on and we just played just ridiculous characters. And then we did a quick little recap just as ourselves at the end of the show. And yeah, and my new one now, I realized I really like talking to people like off the clock and kind of finding out who they really were and more, like, just going a little deeper. And so my new show is a little bit more like Oprah than Glitter in the Garbage was.
I was going to say, who is Drew Drogi as an interviewer? Apparently the answer is Oprah.
That's how I've described myself. That's not arrogant at all, is it? No, I mean, I really enjoy it. I set out to, I love doing people's podcasts. I love being on stuff. But I find that a lot of times I'm talking about a lot of the same things and I'm sort of, you know, if it's my first time on someone's show, they want to, you know, they're asking me some of the same questions. And so I wanted to bring people on and just have them talk about something that they've never talked about before. And so people have revealed like really dark secrets and some of them are a lot of childhood stuff, a lot of sex stuff, drugs. It's all the kind of stuff that they're like, I can't believe I'm saying this. And then sometimes people come on and just say, I don't like tacos. And here's why. It can be that surface. And so, you know, but and definitely my improv skills have helped me learn how to improvise. I mean, learn how to interview better.
Yeah.
And I've also had to learn how to shut up because I was listening to the first couple episodes and I'm like, I had interjecting so much. And I'm like, sometimes just like shut up and let your guests be your guests, you know, let them talk. But it's been flat.
I know that particular challenge of when a guest is kind of at that surface level. How do you get them to go deeper?
Well, it's like I always try to pick out specific details. It's usually a guest that I know, so that's really helpful. You know, occasionally the network, Feral, where I do Minor Revelations, will recommend somebody from their network, and I'll put somebody that I may not know very well or at all. And that's a little bit harder because I don't, for obvious reasons, but when I know the person, I can sort of connect it to something I know about them. Also, just like picking up specific details that they say, you know, and just sort of trying to go deeper than that. And then also the show's called Minor Revelations. So it's like everything's an icebreaker into something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, we find something else to talk about. Because some people come on and they really want to get to their story. And then other people kind of come on and they'd rather just like be in the moment and chat about the day, and both are fine. Both are great.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. Again, listeners, we are here with Drew Drogi, actor, writer, producer, podcaster. Tell everybody about Bright Colors and Bold Patterns.
Oh, yes. It is a solo show that I have been doing off and on for a few years now. I'm going to be coming back to New York. I'm doing 4 days in L.A. in October, and then I'm going back to New York in November 12th at the Soho Playhouse. It's a show about a guy who's pushing 40 who shows up the night before a gay wedding in Palm Springs and sort of realizing that he's at a crisis point. There's a lot of drinking and drugging involved. I've written my dream character, who's a big, loud, drunk, gay mess who you can just enjoy watching fall apart. But I'm talking to, there's three other characters in the show who are just represented by chairs in the show. So it's as if you're watching a four-person play but you only see me playing one character. So the audience gets to imagine what those other people are saying, what they look like. And that's been so fascinating, talking to people after the show, because they'll be like, oh, so-and-so was super hot. And it's like, it's amazing that they just made that up in their mind. But I'm like, yes, he is really hot. You know, you're welcome. So it's a little bit of a choose-your-own-adventure, you know, kind of a show. And it was based on an invitation to a wedding that I received, asking the guests not to wear bright colors or bold patterns.
Wow.
And that was, you know, that was for a straight wedding, and it was a totally different context. But once gay marriage became legal, and there was this push for everyone should want to be married now that we're gay and we're out, and we go get married. And, you know, and I'm obviously so supportive of that, and it's so wonderful, but I wanted to just raise some questions and just ask, like, what if you were somebody who was against that for whatever reasons, or was hesitant, or was scared of what we might be losing in our queerness and in our specialness by trying to be like everybody else, by trying to assimilate and keep up with the Joneses. And so I just wanted to play it. So I wrote a character who was very much on the, you know, opposite end of it, and, you know, based a lot on what is going on in his life. And
always curious, are LA audiences different than New York audiences? Do they laugh at different parts of the show?
It's really interesting, because my character, like, crosses a line many times. It's part of his whole thing, because my character is pro bright colors and bold patterns. And I'm saying, as gay people, we need to be brighter and bolder. We need to go there. We need to not be so worried about fitting in with straight people, or ourselves at a certain point, you know? And so the point is, he crosses a line. In New York, I feel like audiences love it and cheer when I talk about celebrities, or, you know, I sort of trash a lot of, you know, my character does that. In LA, people are really nervous that celebrity might be there. You know, kind of, they're always looking over their shoulder like, oh gosh, can he really say that? You know, and it's like, and it's not even stuff that I necessarily will agree with. It's just that it's like, this is how gay men get together and talk around the pool in Palm Springs. We're going to talk a bunch of guff about, you know, celebrity culture, and that's how we talk, you know? And yeah. So that's been a major thing. And in LA, sometimes people kind of gasp sometimes. And in New York, they're just like cheering and like out for blood. So that's really fun.
As a New Yorker, I totally support that. Tell everybody who's directing. This is pretty exciting.
Yes, Michael Urie, who is just the greatest in the world. And he saw a workshop, a version of the show in New York 2 years ago, and really wanted to take it to the next level and just make a full-fledged production out of it. And so he has been just incredible to work with. And he's been a friend for years, and he's just an incredible collaborator, and just could not be more supportive. And so it's great. I'm really excited to get to go hang out with him again.
Nice.
Too.
So here's the part I don't get, though. You've written this. You will be starring in this. Are there directions that you're thinking to yourself, yeah, totally didn't write it like that? How open are you to being directed if it maybe goes against what you were thinking would play out on stage?
That's a great question. When I first developed this, and my first director in LA is Molly Prather. And Molly worked with me so much on the writing, because it was still so wet, and there were lots of chunks that weren't working or that needed to be massaged. And Molly herself is an amazing writer, and so she and I worked mainly on the writing. And Michael, who is so lovely, he treats my scripts like it's Shakespeare or something, and I'm always like, we can change it, let's fix it, let's cut the line, let's change it, you know. And Michael's like, no, that's what the script says, we're gonna make it work, you know, in staging, or maybe play the line differently, or, you know. But I'm so, and the show is always like 95% the same. There's always this tiny little part that I change, different parts every night, but it's sort of, because it's mine and because I wrote it and I feel very loose with it, there are parts of it that I'm like, oh, I'm going to switch this around tonight. Or, oops, I forgot to say this here. I'll hold on to that and maybe throw it in later, or maybe throw it away completely if it's gone. So and because I think I'm just so used to improvising and writing and rewriting, like, I'm pretty open to changing things, unless it's something where I'm like, this needs to be here. You know, you have to learn how to pick your battles, you know, and because I don't think anything I write is precious, except for when there are times that you're like, this I have to say this to make this point clear. Right. But in terms of comedy, I'm like, change, make it better, cut it. If it's not funny or it's not working, let's lose it, you know.
Nice. The lights come up at the end of the show. What do you want audiences walking out with?
Oh, I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, to me, it's like, I just want to raise the question. I like to raise questions for people, and because I don't have an answer. I don't have any answers. I really like being in a room for, you know, for 75 minutes with that group of people. And, you know, and hopefully, you know, the thing is, I'm playing a guy that we all know, and the guy at the party that you're like, oh my God, that guy is so much fun, until it's like, wow, he's too much. I got to get away from him.
Yeah.
And I make the audience stay with me. I, the reason I don't have other people in the show is that I want you to see this guy, like, not looking at the hot gay guy or looking at the gay guy who has everything together, but looking at this one and, you know, and seeing that in ourselves and, you know, sort of understanding where he's coming from. So I guess that's what I hope people, you know, take away. I mean, it's definitely a comedy show. It's not like a, you know, a somber, you know, rumination on the state of our humanity. But it's, you know, there are moments where I just, you know, it's like where the walls kind of come down and you see that he's in a lot of pain and he's, you know, really going through something, you know, and feels alone in his own community.
Sounds incredible. It sounds incredible. Now, I need you to reassure me here at the end of this interview that this Heather's reboot is going to be okay. Because, I mean,
oh,
even we here in Cleveland this Wednesday, they're screening Heather's at our Capitol Theater, and everyone's headed out.
Yeah.
We're all so excited. But it makes me nervous about a reboot.
I'm sure. Yeah, it is. Heather's was one of my favorite movies growing up. And Jason McAuliffe, who is the creator and showrunner of our show, it's his favorite movie. He's so loyal to the spirit of the movie, yet he's completely turning it on its ear. Oh my God, it has been so much fun. I think it's going to be really great and really special. And I know, like all reboots, people are out to, like, looking at it to hate it and being like, you know, what, why, how dare they, why are they doing this? But I will say, you know, it is very of this moment. You know, you don't want to watch a show where three pretty blonde girls walk down a high school hallway and say, as it, you know,
right.
We're done. We've seen that. We, you know, that Heather's really created so much of that. And this is very much keeping with the theme that popularity corrupts. And it's super dark. I mean, it's really funny, but it's also like, it's going to, I think it's going to be great. I mean, we're in the middle of shooting. This is our last week of shooting this week. But it's been a dream job. It's been the most lovely group of people. And it's, I have really huge hopes for it.
Okay. You're telling me not to be nervous.
Don't be nervous.
Just,
I mean, the thing is too, if you love the movie, there's something in every episode that is a nod to the movie. Like it's very loyal to the movie in that sense, you know? And yet it doesn't just retread what you've already seen before.
Okay.
It's upsetting. It's just like the movie. The movie is like, you know, we remember the movie as being really funny, but like if you go back and watch that movie, it's so dark.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and you can't believe, you know, they're doing that. But it also was made at a time when, you know, school shootings weren't a thing.
Right.
You know, when it was a satire. And so in this environment now where we are, you have to, you know, change and adapt to that, but they don't go soft. It's not going to be a gentle, easy, guilty pleasure kind of show. I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be big and loud, but I think also really great.
As long as my Martha dump truck is there, I'm good.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, listeners, so many different ways that you can check out Drew's work. You should, of course, be following him on social media because he's so much fun to follow there. You can go to Feral Audio and you can check out Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. It's just really great listenings. I've been listening to it just at the gym constantly for the past couple of weeks, and so much fun there. And, of course, at the Soho Playhouse, starting on November 12th, that's when previews are going to start of Bright Colors and Bold Patterns right there in New York City. Drew will be there on stage. His words will be coming out of his own mouth, and it's going to be incredible stuff. My gosh, Drew, these are exciting times.
They are. They are. I mean, it's nice to have a job while the world blows up, you know, and it's nice to sort of get together and, you know, yeah.
Well, what I love about you is that you truly are creating content. You're not just lending your voice to all of these different projects, although you are doing that as well, but you are clearly using your own voice, as we've been telling people to do for all these many years, to create the content that we want to see out there. And it's just a beautiful thing to behold, Drew.
Thank you, Ken. That's so sweet of you. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me on. And happy 420.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one. They'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk monkey shines. Now you could study Shakespeare and be quite elite, and you could charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world's at your feet. Make them laugh, make them laugh, make them laugh. Make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest LGBTQ news out there, and holy cow, is there a ton of it. It's all going down, folks, in Alabama. It's all going down in Alabama. Everyone should be looking at Alabama. Everything is happening right this second in Alabama, which isn't entirely true because, you know, we're going to cover a ton of stories, but Roy Moore, former Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, Roy Moore was just won the Republican primary to replace Attorney General Sessions there in the great state of Alabama in the Senate. And Donald Trump has now backed Roy Moore. He was backing Luther Strange, and Luther Strange did not win the Republican primary, which was a blow to Donald Trump. But Roy Moore has emerged the winner there in that primary. And he is, without question, the most homophobic U.S. Senate candidate in recent history to run there in Alabama. It's the most unbelievable thing. He's had so many controversies regarding his views about LGBT people, but apparently that did not disqualify him from winning the Republican primary to represent the state of Alabama there in the United States Senate. The stuff that he has done, folks, is unbelievable. Let's start going through it. He has previously said that homosexual conduct should be illegal, and he compared it to bestiality. In an investigation by CNN last week, they revealed that Roy Moore believes that gay sex should be illegal. He confirmed that in 2005. He said, quote, homosexual conduct should be illegal, yes. He's compared gay sex to bestiality. He has said, quote, just because it's done behind closed doors, it can still be prohibited by state law. Do you know that bestiality, the relationship between man and beast, is prohibited in every state? It's the same thing. This wasn't one of those quotes, my friends, where he just said, oh, like kind of offhandedly likened it to bestiality. He actually said it's the same thing. That's actually what he said. He has appeared multiple times on a radio show hosted by Pastor Kevin Swanson, who is known for preaching that gay people must be stoned to death. In a 2015 interview, that would be 2 years ago, 2 years ago, in a 2015 interview, Roy Moore himself refused to say whether he supports gay people being put to death. He wouldn't even answer that question. He formerly served as Alabama's Chief Justice, but he was ejected from the role twice, the second time after abusing his authority in a bid to block gay weddings in the state. The disgraced justice has issued a string of orders declaring that the United States Supreme Court ruling on equal marriage doesn't apply in Alabama due to state anti-gay laws, and he ordered probate judges to enforce a gay marriage ban. He said this, quote, this was a politically motivated effort by radical homosexual and transgender groups to remove me as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court because of outspoken opposition to their immoral agenda. No, sir, it was actually because the U.S. Supreme Court, that would be the United States Supreme Court, which supersedes any court of law there in the state of Alabama, because again, it's the United States Supreme Court, they made a decision. And the way the judicial system works is that when the Supreme Court makes a decision like that, it actually applies to all 50 states. That's actually how the judicial system works. So that's why he was removed as Chief Justice of the great state of Alabama. But none of these things disqualify him from winning the Republican primary to represent that state, to be one of the 100 U.S. senators that we currently have. And of course, I've been saying this all along. I mean, this isn't me being prophetic in any way. We knew that this was going to happen. Anybody who has any sense knew this was going to happen. Donald Trump has now endorsed him. Donald Trump went on Twitter and he removed all of his tweets that endorsed Luther Strange, and now he has endorsed Roy Moore. He said he's a good guy and he will be supporting him. And this is an explicitly anti-LGBT thing for Donald Trump to do. Anti-LGBT to the nth degree for President Trump. This, you cannot separate Roy Moore's candidacy from his anti-LGBT views. You absolutely cannot do so. So Donald Trump will continue to endorse him and continue to push for him and maybe even rally for him. And in doing so, it is some of the most explicitly anti-LGBT actions that President Trump has taken, though by no means the only anti-LGBT actions that President Trump has taken, because we have more for you. But just to conclude that story, the special election will take place on December 12th. So if you are there in the great state of Alabama, you must make your voice heard. If you are listening to this podcast or listening to us live on the radio, wherever we are broadcasting in your state, and you know someone who lives in Alabama, you must get them to turn out. You absolutely must. But as I said, not the only anti-LGBT thing the Trump administration has done, not even this week. Officials from the Department of Justice appeared in court this week to argue that discrimination against gay employees is legal. This is what they are spending their time on. Under President Obama, the Justice Department regularly intervened in court battles to argue for civil rights protections for LGBT people, but under Trump's Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the Justice Department has abruptly shifted its stance. The Department of Justice made an uninvited intervention. They weren't asked to do this. They went out of their way to do so. The Department of Justice has made an uninvited intervention in a workplace discrimination case, with officials this week appearing before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. The Manhattan court is currently hearing the case of Donald Zarda, a former skydiving instructor who alleges that his old company, Altitude Express Inc., fired him because of his sexuality. But in its surprise intervention, federal government officials sided with the employer, arguing that it is entirely legal to discriminate against gay employees on a federal level. Zarda's lawyers had cited civil rights protections from the 1960s in their case, but the Department of Justice now insists that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which outlaws discrimination in employment based on sex, does not provide any protection for gay people. As Republicans in Congress have long blocked efforts to pass a specific LGBT anti-discrimination measure, a ruling against Title VII would leave little federal protection for LGBTQ people facing discrimination at work. Deputy Assistant General Hashim M. Mupan appeared before the court this week to argue against gay rights protections. He said this quote, "Employers under Title VII are permitted to consider employees' out-of-work sexual conduct. There is a common sense, intuitive difference between sex and sexual orientation. Discrimination based on sexual orientation does not fall within Title VII's prohibition on sex discrimination because it does not involve disparate treatment of men and women. Rather than causing similarly situated members of one sex to be exposed to disadvantages, terms, or conditions of employment to which members of the other sex are not exposed, differential treatment of gay and straight employees for men and women alike." So that is the Department of Justice going out of their way to intervene in this case. Sarah Warbelow, the Human Rights Campaign legal director, told Pink News in a statement, quote, "Attacks against the LGBTQ community at all levels of government continue to pour in from the Trump-Pence administration. In one fell swoop, Donald Trump's Department of Justice has provided a roadmap for dismantling years of federal protections and declared that lesbian, gay, and bisexual people may no longer be protected by landmark civil rights laws such as the Fair Housing Act, Title IX, or Title VII. For over a decade, courts have determined that discrimination on the basis of LGBTQ status is unlawful discrimination under federal law. The Department of Justice's actions are a shameful retrenchment of an outmoded interpretation that forfeits faithful interpretation of current law to achieve a politically driven and legally specious result." That is the Trump administration going out of their way to argue that there are no protections for sexual orientation within the workforce. They did not have to do that. That is them being proactive, going out of their way to say, LGBTQ people, no, you do not have equal rights in this country. A Democratic candidate who happens to be transgender is facing shocking bigotry. Truly, it's unbelievable that this happens in this realm. From her ultra-conservative GOP opponent, Danica Rehm is a Democratic candidate in the Virginia House of Delegates elections. That election takes place this November. Well, Danica Rehm identifies as transgender. She is a transgender political activist. She is challenging Republican incumbent Bob Marshall, who is a strong and avowed and strong opponent of LGBT equality. Ahead of the election, Bob Marshall has refused to debate with Danica Rehm, has repeatedly referred to her as a man, and deliberately misgenders her at every opportunity. In an interview last month, he challenged a reporter for referring to Rehm as female, asking, quote, "Why do you call Danica a female? Did Danica's DNA change?" Though her campaign has broadly focused on local and national political issues, Danica Rehm hit back at Marshall's smears this week with an ad that embraces her identity as a trans woman. The ad shows her taking hormones and putting on makeup. In it, she says, quote, "I'm running for office because my identity shouldn't be a big deal. This shouldn't be newsworthy or political. This is just who I am. There are millions of transgender people in this country, and we all deserve representation in government. So when I stand up on the state house floor and the speaker says, the gentlewoman from Manassas, LGBTQ kids everywhere will know that they can succeed because of who they are, not despite it." Bob Marshall has held the seat by just one percentage point in 2013, meaning that Danica Rehm could make history as the first openly trans-elected representative in a U.S. legislature. Her opponent, meanwhile, I'm telling you, as anti-LGBT as they come, he previously co-authored the state's now defunct constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. He's been in office since 1991, and he has a long history of introducing hateful anti-LGBT bills to the Virginian legislature. In January, he put forward a bill which would have forced school teachers to out closeted kids to their parents, even if the child is in the closet or fears a violent reaction at home. Again, this is a lawmaker who this January, not like, oh my God, January 78? No. January 2017 put forward a bill which would have forced school teachers to out-closeted kids to their parents, even if the child is in the closet or fears a violent reaction at home. The bill also would have forced people to use the bathroom corresponding to the gender on their birth certificate. It was killed without debate and condemned by Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe. Bob Marshall has also called for the state attorney general to be impeached and charged with supporting sodomy marriage. He doesn't say supporting sodomy. He actually calls it sodomy marriage. And he goes back, his anti-LGBT behavior goes back years. In 2015, he proposed a bill which would have effectively granted people and businesses the right to discriminate on the grounds of sexual orientation and gender identity. Again, that's Bob Marshall. He is being challenged by Democratic candidate Danica Rehm, and he misgenders her. He does anything that he can to completely invalidate who she is. And that's what's happening currently in the United States. It's unbelievable. By the way, let this be a reminder, and I can do this on behalf of the Victory Fund. Years and years ago, we had Dennis Dyson from the Victory Fund on the show, and he spoke so passionately about how important it is to run for local office. Whether it's local office, the dog catcher, the postmaster, the Brattleboro Select Board. Shout out, hi Brattleboro, listening to us on Monday nights on WVEW. Whatever it might be, all the way up to, of course, all the way up to president, that would be an amazing thing. But at all levels of government, Senate, state legislature, whatever it might be, it is so important that that representation be out there. And Danica Rehm did such a great job to articulate why this is important. Because for any number of kids out there, they are not seeing people like them represented. And for trans boys and girls, right, they're not seeing a trans person holding public office. So they're not thinking, that's a possibility for me. I have those aspirations, but that's not a possibility. So I'm just not going to do it. Electing openly trans people to all levels of government really and truly makes a difference. So get out there, folks. I'm telling you, if you have any inclination whatsoever to run for office, I urge you to do so. You can find more information on victoryfund.org. That's victoryfund.org. And they will support you. They will at least walk you through the process of supporting you. It's a great thing. Run for office. I did it. I loved it. I miss it so much. I still want to run for office again. So we'll see what happens. Let's turn to the wonderful world of entertainment. One of the original stars of the show, Dynasty, has come out as gay. Popular U.S. soap Dynasty aired on ABC from 1981 to 1989. Gordon Thompson played the role of Adam Carrington, the villainous long-lost son of the characters Blake Carrington and Alexis Carrington. Well, he came out this week, that actor, in an interview with the Daily Beast. He explained that to come out in the 80s would have been professional suicide without question. He added, quote, "It's not something I've ever announced. I'm assuming that people know, and now that I'm my age, that's fine. I don't go out of my way because it's my generation, I think. I'm probably as homophobic as any gay man alive because of my background. While I was growing up, it was a crime and then classified as a mental illness. It was not until Pierre Trudeau was Prime Minister of Canada when I was 23 or 24 years old did it cease becoming a crime. It was not until I was nearly 30 that it stopped being classified as a mental illness in the U.S. So you're dealing with that, and the shame, the breathtaking lack of self-esteem has only just begun to seep out of my soul." It's incredible. He speaks so well, Thompson, of the plight of older LGBT people. It's not a fact of, oh, come out wherever you are. Of course, there are older LGBT people who are still in the closet. That's how they were raised. On his personal life, he said, quote, "I did have a partner, though not successfully. Sadly, ultimately, because of my lack of self-esteem." So again, that is Gordon Thompson, who played the role of Adam Carrington on that huge blockbuster Dynasty, coming out of the closet. Very exciting news there. Well, let's see, folks. It's another week on This Show Is So Gay, so that, of course, means another update on Donald Trump's tweets banning trans people from serving in the military. Well, this week's news is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have suggested that he advised against an absolute ban on transgender troops, despite claims from President Trump. Earlier this year, just to remind you, Donald Trump took to Twitter to announce that he would impose a ban on transgender soldiers serving openly in the military. He tweeted, quote, "After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not allow or accept transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military." Despite him claiming that, right, that he had done this, taken this action, I mean action, quote unquote, through tweets after consultation with his generals, insiders have claimed that Trump was acting unilaterally to appease anti-LGBT Republican lawmakers and did not consult with any military leadership beforehand. Well, the most senior general in the military, General Joseph Dunford, added fuel to the fire this week when he also appeared to contradict Trump's claim. General Dunford is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the highest-ranking military officer in the United States Armed Forces, serving as the principal military advisor to the President, National Security Council, Homeland Security Council, and Secretary of Defense. He serves as the advisor to all of those people. He was appearing before Congress when Senator Kristen Gillibrand asked about trans troops. He replied this, quote, "I would say that I believe that any individual who meets the physical and mental standards and is worldwide deployable and is currently serving should be afforded the opportunity to continue to serve." He said, quote, "I can promise that that will be my advice. What I just articulated is the advice I provided in private, and I've just provided it in public." Senator Gillibrand continued, she asked General Dunford if he had met with transgender troops to address their concerns about the potential new policy, and he said, quote, "I have not since August when the announcement was made, but I will certainly do that, Senator." Senator Gillibrand is one of the lawmakers behind a bill intended to block the trans ban from moving forward. She is supported by Republican Senator Susan Collins and John McCain, two of the most frequent rebels against Donald Trump. Secretary of Defense James Mad Dog Mattis is pushing ahead with the administration's plans to ban transgender people from the military. There has been a whole host of multiple civil rights lawsuits. We will, I'm sure, have an update for you next week. Who the heck knows? Megyn Kelly is off to a bit of a weird start as the host of her new Today Show branded talk show. She was doing a bit on Will and Grace. She was doing a whole segment of on Will and Grace, and she asked a fan if Will and Grace turned them gay. That's actually what she asked. The 9th season of Will and Grace, that's premiering this week. It will contain 16 episodes right there on NBC. All 4 of the original stars, Eric McCormick, Deborah Messing, Megan Mullally, and Sean Hayes, they are all returning, and they all made appearance on the first episode of Megyn Kelly Today, which is NBC's new morning show. Megyn Kelly then asked a Will and Grace superfan named Russell Turner to come up and join them on stage. Turner is a lawyer. He was overjoyed to join the group, hugging each one with a huge grin on his face, but he maybe wasn't expecting what Megyn Kelly was about to ask him. Kelly's first and only question for him was, quote, "Is it true that you became a lawyer and became gay because of Will?" He responded by saying that Will, quote, "has it made lawyer, best apartment in New York City, and being gay, the trifecta." And closing out the segment, Megyn Kelly said, quote, "I think the Will and Grace thing and the gay thing is going to work out great." Many people were saying the cringe factor was really, really high for that very bizarre thing that Megyn Kelly asked a superfan. Bizarre. Staying in the world of entertainment, though, the star of Being Human and the History Boys, Russell Tovey, he will be flying the rainbow flag in a new DC superhero series as he takes on the part of The Ray. The actor who is out and gay will star in the CW's Arrowverse crossover alongside Supergirl, Arrow, and The Flash in the All-Star Superhero series. The character, whose full name is Raymond Ray Terrell, takes part in the comics as an ambitious reporter who discovers that government scientists were working on a secret project to transform light into a weapon of mass destruction. It is during the investigation that Terrell is exposed to a genetic bomb which gives him the power to absorb light as energy and create illusions by manipulating light rays. And rather than killing him, the experience gives him the power to absorb light as energy and create illusions by manipulating light rays. It's very exciting. I like when gay actors get really cool parts, and I love when gay actors are superheroes. That's a very cool thing. That's happening in the world of entertainment. Let's get back to the world of reality because there are some not so great stories. 2 transgender students were forced off of their high school bus after refusing to obey the gender segregation rules. I didn't even know that there was such a thing happening on high school buses. Did you guys know this, that some buses segregate all the students by gender? The students Leah Washington, who is 16, and Aaron Layla Sweener, who is 15, identify as neither male nor female, which, you know, is non-binary and falls under the trans umbrella. Well, the New York students just wanted to sit on the boys' side of the bus last week. Leo said this, quote, "Before he started the bus driver gave us this weird look and he told us to get to the girls' side of the bus." The 16-year-old explained that, quote, "We didn't move because we felt more comfortable where we were sitting. When we tried to explain it to him, he started yelling at us to move to the other side of the bus." Aaron, the other student, then spoke about the bus driver, saying this, quote, "The whole time he said, 'I don't care, it's my bus. I'm not moving till I get what I want.' He treated us as if we were wrong. The whole experience was traumatic. I've been so terrified of my feelings and who I am, and trying to be myself publicly has been horrifying. Coming into high school was a scary thing to begin with, so members of school faculty need to be trained better on how to act. Students should not be discriminated against because of their race, gender, or sexuality in a place where they're supposed to be safe to learn. We need to make schools a safe space for everyone." There you go. 2 students in New York being asked to move to the opposite side of the bus by the bus driver. These are things that are happening. This is kind of a bizarre story coming up next. Kanye West is playing a gay fish. I almost don't even want to give you more information. Isn't that enough? Isn't that enough? Don't you just need to know that Kanye West is about to play a gay fish? But I suppose I'll give you more information. Kanye West is about to play a gay fish in the new South Park video game called The Fractured But Whole. The show has a long-running joke since 2009, which refers to the rapper as a gay fish. Now the Kanye spoof is front and center in the trailer for the game, which also mocks West's own game, Only One. The trailer, which seems to have very little to do with the actual South Park game, shows Kanye as a gay fish on a mission to get his mother into heaven. I don't really think that we need to cover more on that. That's Kanye West, who is playing a gay fish in the new South Park video game. That's actually happening. That's something I have now said on the show. A group of homophobic students chanted "Make America Straight Again" as they attacked their LGBTQ classmates at a homecoming parade in Kansas. It's believed dirt and other objects were thrown at those marching with the Gay Straight Alliance in the parade at Olathe Northwest High School in Olathe, Kansas. One mother, identified as Missy, told WDAF-TV that her daughter was left in tears after the march last week as she was taunted and attacked. The mother said this quote, "What was supposed to be fun and joyous and celebratory and inclusive turned out to be ugly." The daughter told her mother that a small group of students began to heckle at the Gay Straight Alliance students. They chanted "Make America Straight Again" and told the students to go kill themselves. The homophobic group also reportedly shouted, "You're not welcome here. We don't want you," and used other homophobic slurs, including that F word that I refuse to say. The Alliance was part of the homecoming parade, which passed through the elementary and middle schools before reaching the high school, where the attackers shouted and threw objects. It is believed that those who made the offensive remarks wore "Make America Great Again" hats, a staple from, of course, Donald Trump's campaign. This mother added that she was embarrassed as a parent because she also grew up in the area and had hoped it would be more accepting in 2017. She said this quote, "This isn't who we are. Come on. Where is this coming from? Why? Why do we have to hate each other? I don't get it." The school district has confirmed that they will be investigating the incident, which was apparently not witnessed by any staff at the school. Assistant Superintendent Eric Dugan said this quote, "We didn't see it. If we'd seen it, we would have stopped it immediately. Kids do a nice job of doing things when the adults aren't watching. They know our expectations, kindness and compassion and acceptance. We need to send a strong message to our students that this is not acceptable." Again, that's a group of kids in the Gay Straight Alliance marching in Kansas and having horrible things thrown at them, both objects and words. One more legal story for you. The ACLU has launched a lawsuit against the state of Michigan on behalf of a lesbian couple who were denied the right to adopt. Because that's still happening, apparently. Kirstie and Dana Dumont have been together for 11 years and decided they wanted to take the jump into extending their family. The couple were spurred on after receiving floods of emails from Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services calling for adoptive and foster families. The pair moved into a three-bedroom home with a large garden in a good school district and started the application process to become parents to a child. Kirstie, one half of the couple, said this quote, "When you click on emails and you can see pictures of the kids and stories of the kids, it starts tugging on your heartstrings." However, right, wouldn't it be great if that was just the end of the story? The end. And they adopted, and everything was great. But that is, of course, not the end of the story. They were shocked when they were denied by two state-contracted agencies who claimed that they did not work with same-sex couples. Dana, the other half of the couple, said this quote, "It was kind of a slap in the face. They didn't even know us. How could you say no to people who you don't even know? The most important piece of this is getting some information out there so kids can find permanent, loving homes." The couple is now being represented by ACLU Michigan in the lawsuit against the Department of Health and Human Services and the Children's Agency. The suit accuses the state of discriminatory practices which violate the Constitution by contracting agencies which hold religious objections. The suit argues that the practice of hiring these firms is harmful to the 13,000 children currently in the state's care, as the children could have prospective families. ACLU attorney Jay Kaplan said this quote, "We are suing the state for allowing this practice. It does nothing for providing loving homes for children in need of them." It's unbelievable. Tens of thousands of kids, 13,000 children currently in Michigan's care as children who need prospective and incredible families. But no, these agencies are saying, "I'm sorry, we don't work with same-sex couples." In 2015, a bill legalized the practice of faith-based agencies denying services. The law that's in the books right there in Michigan states that private child-placing agencies, including faith-based child-placing agencies, have the right to free exercise of religion under both the state and federal constitutions. Under well-settled principles of constitutional law, this right includes the freedom to abstain from conduct that conflicts with an agency's sincerely held religious beliefs. Kirstie and Dana hope that by bringing the lawsuit, they can ensure other same-sex couples looking to start a family can have that opportunity. Kirstie finished by saying this quote, "We are just one couple in this situation. There are lots of couples out there. If it's happening to us, it's happening to others as well." 13,000 children in the state of Michigan who are looking for homes looking for homes. And we have these amazing couples out there who want to provide those homes. And these agencies are saying, nope, we would rather keep kids in the foster system than to put them with a loving family because that loving family is gay. Is that not unbelievable? How are we not all so just outraged by that? How are we not outraged by that? We should be outraged by that. And that, my friends, that's all the news for this week. That was a lot of news for you. Again, if you are in the state of Alabama, you need to look up Roy Moore, arguably the most anti-LGBT candidate in recent memory, without question. Look at the things that he has said, and look at the fact that the President of the United States, the President of the United States is endorsing his candidacy. Just as President Trump, and by the way, we like intersectionality, so if you're not following everything that President Trump has said about the national anthem, I know that you guys are. I know that you are practicing intersectionality, and that is a good thing. But just as President Trump, in one of his tweets about the national anthem and all the controversies that he has started with the NFL, just as he said this has nothing to do with race, he will somehow try to say that it isn't anti-gay to endorse Roy Moore. It is the most anti-gay thing ever to endorse this explicitly, explicitly anti-gay candidate to be one of the 100 United States senators. President Trump has already endorsed him, and he's going to continue to do so. I'm sure he will attend rallies for him, and he will somehow try to divorce it from Roy Moore's stances on LGBTQ people in society. No flippin' way. You cannot divorce the two things. Roy Moore, anti-LGBT. And that's all we have to say about that. Of course, our thanks to Drew Drogi. Please go check him out again on November 12th. 8-week limited engagement at the Soho Playhouse. You must go check out Bright Colors and Bold Patterns. He's just doing such incredible work using his voice to make a difference. And that, my friends, is what we want you to go do. Get out there. Go do whatever it is you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. I promise you, if you use your voice the way you know how to use it, whatever's best for you, it's going to make you feel amazing, and it will absolutely make a difference. Get out there and do it. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, and I'm adding in because this came up last week, while you're out there wearing a cape and just saving the world in the way that we do by using our voices authentically, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay? But give it plenty of hope, make them roar, make them scream. Take a fall, but a wall split a seam. You start off by pretending you're a dancer with grace. You wiggle till they're giggling all over the place. And then you get a great big custard pie in the face. Make them laugh, make them laugh, make them laugh. Make them laugh, don't you? All the... What? My dad.